welcome to Casa de Cambio. On this episode of Casa de Cambio, I am so excited to be joined by Michelle Fotheringham. Welcome, Michelle. How are you today?
I am so good, and I am so excited to be chatting to you.
I'm excited to have you on. You've been on my, I have a little board where I, whenever I have an idea for someone for a podcast, I put it on the board, like on a sticky note. And it takes me some time to sometimes approach the guest, but you've been on there for a while because I'm really like what you've been doing with the gig economy and all your stuff that you post on LinkedIn, I think is really topical. So I'm excited to have you here. But first I want to ask you, how was your holiday? Because we were talking about holidays in LA and driving in America before we hit record.
It was amazing. I had a very eclectic break. We had a week in Bright with my family, which is in Northern Victoria, and then we went to LA. It's very hard. I think I'm the only person in the history of the world that's packed for Bright and LA in the one suitcase because we went straight there via Sydney, and Hannah and a mate gave the kids a little amazing Disneyland experience and ran around LA and for a week or so in San Diego. And then where else were we? Wollongong on the way home and Balnarra. It's just been this, we had all of these little holidays that joined together. So it's been so nice after the last few years to have a real true break. And I think that ability to really switch your brain off has helped me reset for this year, because I really haven't come back from the COVID craziness. So just to go, right, this is the year to get the balance back, to actually start looking after myself. So yeah, it's been a really important break for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I've spoken to a few people this month who had quite long summer breaks. For the international listeners, it's February, and that's our, we have usually have a big summer break because we have Christmas and then New Year's and there's school holidays, and yeah, it's summer, so lots of people take extended breaks. I don't usually do it. I'm usually the standard 2 weeks because I like to take a break in winter and go somewhere warm. But yeah, a lot of people that I've spoken to have had like 4 weeks, a whole month, you know, 5 weeks, and I think it's great. Good for you.
I think, you know, last year it, you know, I think people were still in recovery mode from the pandemic. And certainly for me, starting a business as the pandemic launched, you know, launching a business and the pandemic at the same time, it meant that it was a pretty, it was a pretty absorbing few years. And as we've chatted about earlier, you know, you had this 2 years where it was like, well, there's nothing else to do. I'm just going to work, work, work.
Yeah.
To actually, there's other elements of my life and I need to turn back up those other elements of my life. And certainly I did not get that right last year or the year before. No. So it was nice to have a good break and go, right, let's just be a little bit more intentional around how we, you know, balance out these different aspects of our lives.
Yeah, I did better last year, but like I was saying before we hit record, and for the listeners, this is why I take 90 minutes to record episodes, because there's usually a lot of pre-chat and post-chat. but I was talking about how, yeah, I got COVID on New Year's Day 2022 and I was so tired and fatigued. And that was my week where I was supposed to be resting and relaxing, because I usually go back to South Australia for my family Christmas, which was really busy. It's not restful. It's fun, but it's not chilling. And then I had to go back to work and I was starting the year exhausted. Like, I needed time out, and it was so busy and there was so much on. And yeah, like I did better. Like, I managed to go to America for a holiday and I went to New Zealand, which, you know, the past 2 years, there were no international holidays or even interstate holidays. And I did a lot better at prioritizing my work-life balance. But then towards the end of the year, I had a really busy period and I was like, just do it. Cause yeah, when you've got like clients and you have, you know, demand outstripping supply, like, you want to make hay while the sun shines, especially after 2020, which was a disaster, and 2021, which was shaky. And it's like, yeah, you know, like, these trips don't pay for themselves, but now it's a new year. And yeah, like, I'm doing 3 days a week client facing as a little gift, but I'm smashing out podcast episodes and doing a whole lot of business work that got neglected. So it's not like I'm only working 3 days a week, but it is tough. But before we go down that path, we're here to talk about the gig economy. But before we get into that, there's a couple of questions I ask every guest who comes onto the podcast. And the first one is, what are you currently watching, reading, or listening to?
It's very not work related, but what I'm watching at the moment is an amazing Australian comedy called Colin from Accounts. It
is that
is
good?
hilarious. It is
Okay.
really good. I've only just finished watching it, and I watched it by myself. I'm re-watching it with my husband, particularly the
Oh,
first
cool.
few episodes are just hilarious. I'm also watching the Pepsi documentary on Netflix, which is super interesting. It's around a promotion that they had, a points-based promotion, and they advertised for whatever it was, 4 million points or whatever it was at the end of the TV advertisement, you would get a Harrier jet. So like a big, and they put no disclaimer on it. So it's about the story of this guy who actually managed to collect the how many millions worth of points and tried to cash them in for a Harrier jet. I'm not at the end of that yet, so I'm not sure how it all
was
plays
this in
out.
The 80s or something?
Yeah, like 90s maybe,
yeah.
Early 90s. So, and I just find the whole, you know, Cola Wars just super interesting. So that's
Yeah,
good.
I'll check that one out. So what's it called? That's all right. I'll find it.
Can't
I'll
tell
put it
you.
In the show notes.
If you Google, if you put on Pepsi into Netflix, I'm sure it will pop up. I'm reading a book called Cult Status that was gifted to me by a very lovely workling for Christmas. So making my way through that, and the highlight is going crazy. And I am listening to, ad nauseam, the Matilda soundtrack because my kids are obsessed with the Matilda musical. I think they're obsessed with the fact of these children being, you know, revolting and working against the system. So I'm hoping they're not planning a mutiny in my house, but
yeah, especially
that's
not after
me at the moment.
Disneyland.
Not after Disneyland. I know. Come on, kids. So yeah, that's me.
I used to love Roald Dahl books as a kid. So I love that some of them are coming back and, you know, kind of, even though it's a remake, I'm here for it because I used to love all of that stuff. Great. The other question is, what is the best piece of career advice you ever received?
I think it's really simple. Life is just too short. It's too short. Like the number of, you know, I've had moments in my career where, you know, you're stuck in that job where you're not particularly happy and life is just too short. And I think we're seeing people embrace that a lot more in this post-pandemic era. I was talking to a leader just the other day who stepped into a new senior role and the role just wasn't what was promised and the organizational values didn't align to her personal values and she just left after, you know, 7 or 8 months. And I think in the past you will see people more hold on, I need to get to the 18 month mark or
can't be seen to be job hopping.
Life is just too short. So I think, you know, that's probably the best advice I've ever seen, and whether that means actually I'm going to take a career risk and go out and work as an independent consultant or start my own business or actually just try a different work model that's going to help me design my life and my work in a different way. Life is just too short. And I've seen it a lot also with women who are ready to start a family. They're miserable in a job, but they want to hold on for that maternity leave, which of course, you know, there's a fantastic financial benefit, but I've seen people hang on to that miserable job for years trying to get pregnant. So I think the fact that, you know, life looks different now after the pandemic and things like flexibility are now a currency. So it's not so much about, you know, the tenure and the salary, but how is this work fulfilling and helping me live my best life. The other great advice, which we were just chatting about before I actually wrote it down, I think this is actually also some of the best advice I've ever been given. You said to me, your inner critic is an idiot. And I just think that is fabulous. Like, you know, of all the talk about, you know, self-talk and, you know, we were talking about it in the context of listening to yourself back and how, you know, challenging that can be. It's like, your inner critic is often an idiot. Like,
what a dickhead.
She is
you wouldn't
wrong.
Be friends with them if you knew them in real life. You'd be like, oh,
no
fuck off.
So I'm like, oh my gosh, of all these like self-help books that have been written over time, you kind of just nailed it in one sentence. Your inner critic is an idiot. We could probably insert an F in there somewhere, but it's true. So I love that. So great advice to
make. I'll tell the story for the listeners. So I book 90 minutes when I have guests on, because usually there's like a bit of chatting and catching up. And Michelle and I, like, I think we had a virtual coffee. It was probably in 2020 when I joined Workling, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, I've spoken to you on the phone a couple of times, but real brief, you know, because we're both very busy, which is good.
Very busy and important women.
But I was talking about, you know, how I, now that I have a podcast, I edit the podcast myself. And when I'm recording the podcast every single time, and maybe I'm going to do it right now, I think about myself, something I said or did. I'm like, oh, that was really bad, Tash. You're going to have to edit yourself out. The way you asked that question was just dumb, dumb, dumb. You're so annoying. Your listeners are going to get so annoyed with the way you interrupted that guest, blah, 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 blah. And then I listen back, and I never think this about a guest ever, ever. I never would. And I listen back when I'm, you know, editing it, because that's the thing that you need to do to podcast. And I go, when I listen back, I go, that was actually fine. You were fine. And it's made me a lot more confident, because I did do that when I'm public speaking. I'm like, oh, you made a big, big mistake. Everyone thinks you're dumb. And yeah, I was like, your inner critic is an idiot, because yes, they're lying to you constantly.
You are not dumb. Your inner critic is dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's been an interesting exercise recording your voice and having to listen back to it, because that's not something I would have ever done if I had started a podcast. And now I don't even want to outsource editing the podcast, like, because I quite enjoy doing it, and I clean up my apartment at the same time. So I'm multitasking. But anyway, back to the gig economy. But that, yeah, I'm glad you wrote, that's so cute that you wrote that down. But yeah, your inner critic, total dickhead. You wouldn't want to have a beer with them. They would not pass the pub test. You wouldn't want to, like, vote them into any sort of position of power. They're the worst. The worst. So gig economy. So you, would I say, run a collective or have a business called Workling? And that's like, yeah, work, like W-E-R-K, like RuPaul style. RuPaul inspire that name or?
No, actually, so the W-E in Workling is kind of for the collective. So it's to kind of represent that we are a community. Oh. And then work, obviously, and the end of it is to reflect when you work, when you come across those great people in your career. Often we talk about work husband and work wife, and I don't really like that. It's kind of over sexualized, or it's just a bit, I don't know, it gives me the creepies. But when you do come across those great people in your career, the relationship is more like that of a sibling, because you can have those conversations, you can be really bold with each other, and you do spend these intense periods of time with each other when you're working on a project or working in an organization. So it was kind of the work and the idea of sibling that kind of came together.
That.
And that's how we came to Workling.
Oh, that's great. So starting at the very beginning, can you tell the listeners when we talk about gig economy, I feel like that's a phrase that, you know, gets thrown around so much. Like, what does that really mean? So what are some of the key features of the gig economy?
Look, I mean, the gig economy is a pretty vast bucket. And I think, you know, it spans all the way from your delivery, your drivers, through to your independent consultant types. And that's more at the end of this gig economy, I would call it, you know, the professional gig economy that I'm really talking about. So largely this community are what I would call corporate escapees. So there are people who have had amazing internal experience. They've worked in a range of often leadership positions within organizations who just want to work in a different way. It may be that they have children and want a different sort of flexibility. It may be that they are really passionate about just working on the types of work and the type of projects, the types of clients that fill their bucket. But for one reason or another, they've opted out of traditional employment. They want to work, have a portfolio career, much like yourself with your podcasts and your clients and your, you know, everything you've got going on. And they want to contribute to organizations in a different way. They just don't want to be employed. So It's really vast. And I think that is some of the challenges when you start to look at the metrics around the gig economy and even having a conversation around rights and so forth in the gig economy. You've got a really vulnerable end of it, your delivery drivers and your Uber drivers. Yeah. And then you have, to be perfectly honest, quite a privileged end of the gig economy.
Absolutely.
So it is quite varied, and you know, it's that kind of professional end of the gig economy that I work with.
And that's probably what we're going to concentrate on in this podcast, because that's where we're both sitting. So speaking about the professional end of the gig economy, like, can you talk us through some employment trends and how they've changed in the last few years? Because I know it's hard, like, I know I'm really subjective of this because I'm sitting in a certain space, right? And before I kind of started doing, this casa de cambio, you know, few different things, I was a like career contractor, so free or freelancer for the internationals. So I was still a gig economy person for a long time anyway. But what are some things that we've seen, and how have like employment trends changed in the last few years?
Yeah, the thing that I really love about working in this space is there is movement on both sides of the equation. So on the business side, we've seen time and time again, if especially over the last few years, is we live in this dynamic environment, yet we continue to design our organizations in a way that is very static. We feel that we need the exact same number of people with the same skills all of the time. And that just isn't the reality. We're again seeing a whole heap of layoffs in the tech space. So we start to question, is scaling up through recruitment costs and scaling down through redundancy payments really the best way to augment our workforce? Mm. So there's a lot of changing momentum on that business side of it. So how can we create this more nimble and agile workforce? I was looking at a paper the other day that suggested that 80% might have been a touch more, 80% of leaders feel that this job-based design is not the best way to design work. So I think it's still something that a lot of leaders are grappling with, but we can see the conversation shifting away from job-based work to outcome-based work. And I think we're on a bit of a journey there, particularly in the corporate type workforce, because we've always designed work around time. I need someone 5 days a week for 6 months, or I need someone 3 days a month, 3 days a week forever, to shifting it to what is the outcomes we need right now. And yes, some of those outcomes are best placed delivered by employees because maybe they stretch over time, maybe it's an ongoing requirement. But other needs are best served by bringing in independent talent to deliver that work. So there's a whole host of change, I think, happening on that side of the equation, but I think we're early days. On the talent side, it's interesting because more and more people are opting out of that traditional work model. There was some research, I think it was one of the big US platforms, it might have been freelancer.com, who did research around and that found that 20% of employees are seriously considering a move to independent consulting work, which I would actually think it's higher than that. I am astounded by the number of people that reach out to me on an incredibly frequent basis going, is this for me? This is something that I want to do in my future.
I've done a podcast episode, To Contract or Not to Contract. So that was episode two, because I get asked all about contracting. And I think, and what you said about all the layoffs, like, I've had a view for a long time that if you take a permanent position, yes, there are certain protections that are offered to you. Like, if you're laid off, you need to be given, go through a consultation period, and there's a redeployment service, or, you know, there's often some redeployment offerings, and you can be paid out a redundancy, which is sometimes in Australia very generous. So there's definite benefits to that. But in terms of like what you're going to be doing, I think a perm role is a 1 to 2 year commitment. Like, I'll do it for a year. And like you even said, people are leaving before that year. So it could be six months now. But also, like, it doesn't mean that you're guaranteed a job for life, because restructures and layoffs, like, restructures happen in, you know, the big corporates in Australia really every 6 months. People are constantly reorganizing teams and Yeah, like I remember when I was at Telstra, like there was one happening every 6 months and I escaped the first two, but the third one I was, you know, and like I'm not saying it in, as though it's a bad thing, which is why I'm, because everybody who listens to the podcast knows I loved Telstra and I took a secondment into another area and I went back as a consultant after I left. So I don't have a bad word to say. I'm just using it as my personal example. But yeah, like that's very common. It's, and you moved into new teams. And so even the people who hire you don't know if they might move into another role. Like nothing's set in stone.
No. And I think that whole concept of job security is evolving because, look, don't get me wrong. I still think having a permanent job, you know, if you've got a permanent government job, of course, that is like a pretty stable form of income. But I think that concept of job security will change over time because if you're in a permanent role, you have one source of income. Now, if that job goes away, you have, for those who want to follow my maths, zero sources of income. And I remember talking to someone during the pandemic, it must have been 2020, who worked in the sports industry. And she was like, oh my gosh, I will never find myself in this situation again where I'm reliant on one business for my income. So if you look at someone who has a portfolio career where they might be doing some consulting, they might be doing some coaching, they might have a learning program they're developing, they're working across a couple of different clients. Yeah, if, you know, if time, you know, there's some level of global disruption, they might lose two of their clients and maybe their training. But you'll still have other streams of revenue. So don't get me wrong, I still think there is more income security today working in a permanent role, but that's going to change. And if we start looking at our income as revenue streams versus this one stable income, it's very interesting, and that will change over time. And I think, you know, as I said before, people's priorities shifted over the last few years and they want to design their life and their work in a different way, and organizations undoubtedly have become far more flexible. But the most flexible, like if you looked at the flexibility on a spectrum, the greatest amount of flexibility is when you're working for yourself.
Oh my God.
And you're designing your life and selecting those projects and selecting those pieces of work that not only work for you, but align to your values as well. So it's really shifting. So I think as the business, you know, I spoke about the business side of the market first. Yes, there is growing momentum because they need more flexibility and a more agile and nimble workforce, but they also need great talent. So I actually think the thing that is going to really tip things over to this being a very important aspect of an organization design is the fact that this talent, these people who want to work in this way, are not accessible via traditional means.
Nope.
So we surveyed our WorkLink community. 90% have no intention of returning back to a traditional job.
No.
You cannot access that talent by designing a job and advertising that job. So I actually think what's going to tip this over is just the demand on the talent side. Them saying, I don't want to be acquired. I want to be accessed. Yes, I will come and deliver that amazing piece of work for you, but no, I do not want a job. So I think that talent access will be the other thing that really makes businesses have to think differently about how they design work and access talent. For me, what the future of work looks like, and you know, I have an org design background as well, so I like to geek out about this type of stuff. But for me, what the very mature organizations are doing is looking at what is the capability that we need in-house. How do we start to define that core team? And then what's the bench talent we need? So even if you look at that, say, in a comms team, as opposed to having seven people all year round, because work isn't static, work goes up and down. So you might have a core internal employee team of five people. You'll then have a bench of independent talent who handpicked, and they are an extension of your internal team. So you can flex up, flex down, bring in different capability as you need. Now, those people on the bench are not going to sit there twiddling their thumbs waiting to be tapped in. So you have a bench big enough to have a level of availability, but they are invested. They know your team. They know the organization. They can just step in and out because they have this beautifully broad portfolio career. I think the shift that also needs to happen from organizations to make this as a reality is stop seeing your workforce and your talent just as employees and starting to redefine it. Actually, our talent pool is anyone, our workforce and our talent is anyone doing work in this organization. Mm. Now, yes, they might be an employee or they might be a part of our independent talent bank. Yeah, we pay them via invoice. Yes, we have a statement of work and contract, but the reality is they are a part of our talent ecosystem and we need to start talking about them as talent, not suppliers. So when Natasha comes in and delivers a change program, she's not a supplier. She's a talented human who is coming in and delivering work in this organization. So I think there's so much opportunity to just broaden the way, you know, you look at our people and culture functions, our recruitment functions, it's all about acquiring employees. But if we start to think about how we engage and how we attract and how we design work, then there's just so much scope to think more broadly about the talent ecosystem.
Yeah.
I start talking about this stuff and then I don't shut up because I get really excited.
That's why it's a podcast. That's why we do 90 minutes. And hey, I don't have anything after this, so we can keep going. I did a podcast once with a friend of mine, Jove Roland, and it was around, it was like gender equity because she's got a strong HR background, gender equity, and, you know, how HR practices and hiring practices can help close the gender pay gap. I think the podcast was my longest one at 90 or 100 minutes, but our actual conversation went for 4 hours. So, you know, but that's also why I started a podcast. I'm not good at writing short, snappy pieces. I'm getting better at it. But I was like, I can talk about so much stuff in a podcast and it can be 45 minutes and that's going to be acceptable. So, yeah, and that's what I want you to do. I want you to talk. I don't want to have to do all the work in the conversation. So a few things that you said there were so good and they're just all things that I've noticed in the change management industry. So it's interesting and also pleasing to hear that that's being replicated more broadly. Like one of them is going on to seek or onto job boards and applying for jobs. Like as a contractor, I have not done that for years. Like I get jobs through my network and I have a network of recruiters, especially the recruiters who are the really good recruiters. They're the first ones who get my CV as soon as I'm looking. Now it's more just companies. Because then I was noticing, and this was another factor for me to, you know, start my own business and try to go direct. I was getting jobs through my network. And then they were saying, well, here at, you know, blah, blah company, you have to go through a talent agency because we can't, you know, we can't do a statement of work. So then I would go, okay, I'm going to go through whichever recruiting agency or tech, but then I would find out they're still taking $300 or $400 a day and they didn't even place me. And I was like, And so now I go direct and I don't think the total price is that different, but no one's taking fat cuts of, you know, the job that I got based on my own merit and my own relationships. If they'd place me, whole different story. And, you know, there's also, like the use of like talent pools and collectives and, you know, specialist agencies. But yeah, I've had a few, experiences with clients recently where they're like, yep, we're going to go to market. And yeah, they just chuck something up on Seek. And I'm like, you're going to share that on LinkedIn. You're going to because the best people in your industry, one, they don't do perm roles. Cause the other thing, and this is happening in change, there's a big difference between perm rates and contract rates. So yeah, unless you're vying for mat leave, you know, like most the people who are really good are going to get do the contract work, and the people who I guess have the constitution for it, because it isn't for everyone, I'll admit that. I think I was talking about this with Gilbert or a recent podcast guest. Like I take more than 4 weeks leave every year because I can, because I'm not bound to this 4 weeks, you know, and then I take time, you know, where I work on my business. So it's not really leave, but it's unpaid. Like I have a 6-week trip to Europe planned and I just took 2 weeks off and I'm thinking of going to Thailand for 2 weeks in May. And you know, because I'm in charge of my own calendar and but also that annual income is still going to be higher than if I was in a perm role. So there's a big differential. So that means the best talent is going to go for the top dollar. And so it's going to be really hard to convince those talented people to take on a perm role where they don't have the control. They're getting paid less. It's much less flexible. Like I've had this conversation with a lot of people. They're like, do you know anyone? I'm like, I don't know anyone who's looking. All the good people are employed. And if your budget is this, you might get an analyst. But anyone who's good, you're going to have to, you know, like they're getting paid the big bucks. And so, there's a lot going on. And I think, this attitude that, oh, we're just going to create a job advertisement and see who applies. Like, you're not going to get any good applications because, you know, recruiters are going through LinkedIn, searching for people, messaging people. Because I've gotten a lot of work that way just from some, or not even a recruiter, someone who's got their own consulting company going, hey, I'm this person. You don't know me, but I'm looking for blah. And I'm like, actually, I've got some availability and, you know, it's all on.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think there's a few things you said there. There's amazing people working in permanent roles.
I didn't want to say that the crap people are perm. I definitely didn't want to do that.
No. And I think, I don't think that permanent workforce is going anywhere. I think it's still needed within organisations and there's plenty of people who want to work in that way. So I don't think we're going to see that shift. I think then when you start to look at the contingent workforce, we've often bucketed that all in one, this contingent workforce concept. The reality is, much like our customer segments, there is different talent segments in there. So you have people, and which you see a lot in the change space, more of the contractor. So longer term, sometimes full-time type work.
They
might go through labor hire or go through recruitment agencies, or they might be employed directly on a fixed term contract. Where I see a lot of movement is more in this gig freelance type way, where it is a statement of work, where you are invoicing, as you just said. Where the challenge does come in for a lot of organizations, depending, particularly if you're a bigger organization, it can be really difficult to engage an independent consultant.
So depending on
what their procurement and supplier set up, like, it is horrendous. So one thing that we have found with Workling is, particularly with those bigger clients, if we can get set up as the supplier, then we can facilitate that invoicing.
And that is so great, because that is such a blocker. That is such a blocker to working direct. And I found that most of my clients are smaller companies for that exact reason. Or I have to do a piece of work so small that it can be paid for with a corporate credit card.
It's such a challenge. But, you know, you mentioned before about the whole markup issue. For me, it's not the preferred business model, but we are very transparent about the percentage. I think where the challenge comes in with other labor hire or subcontracting arrangement is there is no transparency. It's like, well, you're getting paid this and
I'm not going to tell you,
I'm not going to tell you what we're charging you at. So we don't mark anyone up. We don't do anything. Yes, we charge a engagement fee, which is very transparent. It's very small compared to, you know, even compared to recruitment costs.
But you supplement that with a monthly membership though as well, which helps you, so you don't have to charge these kind of exorbitant.
And I think where I would love to take the business down the track is more, I want to get away from that whole business model and move more to a subscription basis, where it's like, well, this is, the business is paying this subscription fee and that's how they access talent. But you know, we were working with a client, a very large organization who we've done quite a bit of work with. We've set up as a supplier. We've had multiple different gigs. It's been amazing. But one of our Worklings, and when I say Worklings, I'm talking about talent within our community, reached out to me saying, oh, I've been approached by a big consultancy to go into this particular business to do some work. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so frustrating. Because if they had so the organization, the leader thinks they're getting this brand name. What they're actually getting is a subcon. So if she had have come directly through WorkLink, her day rate would have been X. But because she's been subcontracting through this big consulting agency, it's like 2.5 times what they would have paid. So I think that's the real shift to go, oh, why can't we? Like, how can we find a way to access this amazing talent directly? There has been a real over-reliance on big consulting agencies, and much like, you know, my comment around permanent employment, of course, like, WorkLink's not going to take over PwC anytime soon. Of course,
there's going to be the stars.
of course, there's a need for big consultancy. But there's a lot of frustration in the market at the moment. I'm paying $5,000 a day. They've sent me out a grad who's never actually done a change project before, and I'm teaching them.
I was teaching them how to do the thing.
And look, it's not, to be honest, I've had conversations not only with the client, but with that individual. I'm sure if you cast your mind back, you will remember being effectively being sold as an expert when you have no idea what you're doing
and you can't let the client know.
And you can't let the client know, which, don't get me wrong, I'm all for learning and, you know, grads learning, but being sold as an expert is not the best, you know, learning environment. So there's some real frustration around going to those agencies and not necessarily getting the level of experience that you're after versus either going directly to someone like yourself or going to a community like WorkLink and being able to access someone with 15, 20, 25 years experience of working in-house. So actually being, I always say to leaders, like, our talent have been in the shit. Like, we get that every organization is, you scratch the surface and, you know, there are, it's not always easy to navigate, but our talent have been in there. They haven't been on that surface. They have been in your head of employee experience or GM of comms or whatever. They've been in your job and in your team's jobs. So yes, you could pay for a brand, a big consulting brand, or you could access talent who can come in and do the work at probably a third of the cost or half of the cost with a complete different level of experience. And they are running their own business. Their reputation, their livelihood is contingent.
They give all the fucks.
I remember, you know, and a lot of this comes down to trust. I've had a few leaders, but how do you know that they are going to do the work? I'm like, mate, this is the business. Like, if they don't do it,
they're done. Melbourne business community is very small.
I know. Like, it's their livelihood. It's when you're working as independent talent, you cannot phone it in. You don't have a day where you just phone it in because you are there to deliver outcomes. You have been engaged to deliver outcomes. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what you're there to do, because if you don't do a great job now, that next gig's not going to come. And, you know, our talent are there to make the leaders look great. It is when a leader is like, oh my God, you know, workload is exceeding the resources I have available, or I don't actually have this specialist capability. I don't have a senior enough change manager. I don't have someone who's done M&A before or whatever the situation. Like, I need to, like, they are there to come in and make you look good. And it's quite interesting when you compare it to the way that we've traditionally accessed talent in the past. You write your job description, you put it on Seek, you then interview and you blah, 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 and then weeks notice and what, like, whatever the average is, like 40 days or whatever. Yeah. The cost, I think the average cost of fill is like $25,000,
$26,000. Yeah.
Then you have the onboarding process where, you know, you're probably not really up and running for another couple of months because you've got to build all of the relationships and get the lay of the land. You're too scared to do anything too quickly. When you're accessing independent talent, you are either, you know, going to your network, asking for referrals. Maybe you've listened to this podcast and you want Natasha, or you're going to a community like Workling and you're going, hey, I need someone to come in and X, Y, Z, you know, write our new social media strategy, do our D&I, design this leadership, whatever it is. You can be meeting with the talent the next day. You know, we've already checked their availability. We've already checked budget aligns to yours. Like we've had gigs brief on a Thursday and by Monday they're starting.
Oh yeah. I've had that happen. It's so funny because I'll be like, and I'll give the example of, I'll use my own experience. Like I've given myself a little gift of 2 business days a week for the month of January and it's the 3rd of February today. So I'm still in that mode. So it's about, I don't know, 6 or 8 days where I'm doing podcasting, I'm doing a lot of Casa de Cambio stuff, but then I start thinking, okay, I'm seeing my bank account go down and, you know, I haven't like been chucking out invoices because I had some time off and I'm like, okay, you need to get that bank account looking schmick again. Literally phone rings. What are you up to? I'm like, I've got 2 days becoming available in February. Meet this person. Like I've met a CEO of an organization yesterday. I'm writing a proposal this afternoon. And also funny because I'm competing against a large consulting house for the proposal because it's for a large company that is a previous client of mine. So I know I've already done good work there. I have a reputation and I know I can beat them on price because their rates are ridiculous for a mid-level person and it's a very niche piece of work. So hopefully I win that. And I'm like, okay, well, this 2 days, like it's the race is on. Who's going to get those 2 days? And yeah, like, and it's just a matter of like literally the phone ringing and people going, what are you up to? Yeah.
Yes.
And it's so funny. And
it can happen so quickly. And the other thing is once you do get that piece of work, the whole first few weeks and like, I can't quite explain it, but independent talent, when they're in to do a bit of work, they've already scoped the work through the proposal period. They already have the milestones. They already know, and they just get in and do it. There's none of this induction period. Yes, they've got to build relationships, but it's a different sort of relationship. You're delivering, you're in there, you've wrapped it up. I've spoken to a few leaders where they're like, oh, we're thinking about employing someone. What might a Workling solution look like? We had a learning program design where they had a budget of, it might have been like $90,000 to find a learning person. And I'm like, okay, well, for that, you'll get someone at a certain level and they'll come into the organization. Let me just scope out what that program of work, look at what you actually need. And for that same dollar amount, what can be delivered over the next 12 months? Or
I know
even
a lot
if we've
of great instructional designers, you know, and they all operate through their own ABNs.
Yes.
And they might be doing direct contract work, but then at night and on the weekends, they do some hourly rate stuff. And yeah, like the proposal that I'm writing at the moment it's not instructional design. It's a different specialty, but I'm putting someone else on there on an hourly rate because I'm like, well, this organization doesn't want to pay me my day rate because I'm slow at that stuff, but someone who's really fast, it'll be cheaper than me and they're going to do it at night and on the weekend. So it's like, you could get an expert and you could, you know, source it to a few different like high talent people for an hourly rate or like a statement of work and they can just complete it in 3 weeks. It doesn't have to be 5 days a week and then it becomes a lot more affordable. Yeah.
Focus on what the outcome is and by all means cost up what a big consultancy, an employee option might look like and an independent talent option, but focus in on who that person is that's coming in to do the work and what those outcomes are. Yeah, I think we've just become really obsessed with designing work around time and needing to know we have that person all the time. But even on some change projects, like, you know, we're obsessed with employing or accessing 5-day a week change leads. Yeah, sometimes you might need a 5-day a week change. So you think there's exactly 5 days worth of work every week of a change project.
Yeah.
I would beg to differ for most change projects. You know, maybe you'll have your change manager. There might be actually certain points you need to bring in a more of a internal comms or an instructional designer or
an analyst. So you can supplement with an analyst if you're struggling to find the senior talent. And I've run into that issue with because some of the bigger consulting houses I've been approached, they're like, hey, we're desperate. We'll pay you whatever you want. Like, and I'm like, cool, can we do it 3 days? They're like, no, it has to be 5 days. I'm like,
yeah,
if you find someone good, like, firstly, my 3 days is most other people's 5 days. And yes. Secondly, like, you people have teams of analysts, so you can supplement a lot of that stuff. And that, mm-hmm. and that's what I wanted to ask you about, is running into that question. Like, we've talked a lot about some of the mindset shifts that need to happen and some of the barriers to really that companies have in terms of them really being able to embrace, you know, on-demand talent and the gig economy. So who, like, which employers are doing this well? Like, is, what are you seeing in terms of that mindset shift actually happening in the market at the moment?
I would say we're still in early days in Australia. Where yeah. the market's at right now is still quite reactive.
Yeah.
So help, I need someone to come in. I need a change lead for this project. Help, I need mm-hmm. an intern. I need a comms person to redo yeah. our web. So it's very reactive. Like, I've got a need now. Ah, I need to find someone. And even our organizations that we've worked, you know, 6, 7, 8 gigs with are still, you know, there are no worklings there. And they know they can come back and tap in as the needs arise. I think there's a whole lot of opportunity to flip from this reactive mode to a strategic mode mm. where we have our internal change team of 5 amazing change people, and we have an intentional bench yeah. of another 6 change people. Not only do we know, not only are they an extension of our internal change team, but actually all areas of the business have access to them. So if they come to us oh. and go, we need a change support for XYZ project, we can go, well, we don't have internal access, but here's access to the Workling platform. We can access the Workling bench.
Yeah, who's available?
See Natasha yeah. And this person, see who's available, see day rates and engage them off that. So I think from a resourcing perspective, leaders are definitely getting there. From an org design strategic perspective, I think we've got some way to go. But it's a really exciting space. And mm. as I said earlier, it's the fact that there's needs on, you know, really what we're talking about here is a two-sided marketplace. Businesses need access to great talent. Businesses need more nimble work models. And talent and a portion of the workforce desperately want to work in this way. So it's a really exciting place to be at the moment. And there is mm. just so much opportunity ahead for businesses to get in front of where the workforce is going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like in many businesses as well, like, they almost treat talent like the order taker, like, we need this, you go and procure the person. Whereas, you know, it probably, there needs to be a shift within those businesses that, yeah, you're going to change the talent model and move to all of that stuff as well.
So, and I think organizations organizations are just, we will, you know, it feels safe to own talent. I have acquired you. You are mine. You just work for me and only me. And therefore I have more control. But particularly, you know, when we're working with leaders for the first time and they have their first Workling gig, they're like, sold. Like, this is yeah. just a great way, this, you know, people I have in my pocket and I get to deploy them. And, you know, I think where there are those trust barriers, they're just quickly disproven. You don't need to own talent to be yeah. able to have amazing people and deliver amazing pieces of work for you.
Yeah.
So how do we reframe it so we're accessing talent, not acquiring talent?
Yeah, great, great. Well, what advice do you have for someone who's thinking of taking the plunge into the gig economy work? What would you tell them?
There's probably a few things. I think start by having a conversation with people in your network who do work in this way and hear their stories and hear their advice. I think it would be remiss of me not to acknowledge there is an amount of privilege that comes with this work. Often it's yeah. people who have had really successful careers, have a level of financial stability. Yes, they still need to earn income, but are in a financial position where they can take that risk.
Yeah.
So I think really running the numbers and making sure that it works for you. Reaching out to your network. The first thing I did when I started freelancing was I made a list of every job I'd ever had and the people that I bloody loved working with mm. when I was in that role.
Yeah.
And I reached out, even if it had been an awkward 10 years since I'd met with that person, I reached out for a coffee. And that wasn't to hustle, that wasn't to try to get a gig. It was to reestablish relationships and build my confidence in networking and being able to reach out to people. Now, one of those people just happened to go, "Oh, actually, I've got something you could come in and do for me." And that wound up happening. And
Well,
that
because
was
the
my first gig.
conversation, you'll find out what's going on in the industry because all of those people are now working for different organizations or maybe the same one that you were at 10 years ago. And they're going to know who's got the big projects or who needs help, or and they might introduce you to someone else. And it's not, yeah. And I call those people business friends. Like they're not friends that you don't go to the pub with them on a Saturday, but you loved working with them and you got on so well with them and you'd love to hear about what they're up to. And yeah, making sure you keep that, like keep working that kind of network muscle is so important because you don't want to be seen to only reach out when you want something. But yeah, saying, hey, what's going on? It's been ages. Let's have a coffee. It can be a really good way of getting a pipeline of
I
work. Yeah.
agree. And I'm just also a big believer in career karma. You help other people,
Yeah.
you put goodwill out there, and you know, one of these days it will come back to you. So
Yeah.
reaching out to people you've loved working with, thinking about what is the work you can do versus what is the work you'd love to do. So it might be actually that, yes, you've got a change background, you can do change stuff, but actually what you really love is facilitating learning programs or what have you. And just think about when you want to flip between the two. So will you still do change work if you're you know, have some downtime, or and how are you positioning yourself? So it doesn't mean it's never a hard and fast rule, but just think about the work that fills your bucket and you love to do versus the other stuff you can stretch into because you've got the skill set for it. Getting active on social media, is
Yes.
easy for me to say because I now like live on LinkedIn, but it wasn't always the case and it can feel
No.
extremely cringy at the start. But
Yeah.
it, yes, it's great in terms of being able to, you know, share your perspectives with a whole heap of people, but it also helps you get clear on what that perspective is. So that is really important, and it can feel awkward. And it doesn't need to be these long form articles. It can be two sentences. It doesn't need to be this, you know,
Oh, here's a
time
picture of
consuming.
me catching up with my old team because I'm doing the networking. People love that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, people love a photo of someone. Like, I just, ugh. Anyway, yeah, I don't get that, but like people love a selfie. Anyway.
Yeah, people, they do really well. I actually, I don't know if I'm going to write this post, but I'm a bit dark on the LinkedIn algorithm because I feel like when I'm like, here's a piece of content that's relevant to my industry, that's free, that I spent hours creating. Algorithm says no, not going to show it to anyone. Here's a picture of me having a glass of wine with Sharon Connolly when I went to Sydney last weekend. Oh, it's like I'm not even saying anything.
I know. It's like, yeah, that would be my other advice. Don't think about the LinkedIn algorithm because it's evil,
Yeah, but
and it
it is an
will
excellent free marketing tool for your brand. And also, anyone who's thinking of hiring you is going to go check out your LinkedIn. So make sure your profile's up to date. It's looking good. You've got a good blurb. You know, a recent picture says the chick who's had the same picture for 5 years. But yeah, like just some regular posting, people will start, you know, engaging with what you have. And that's how I got my first client. I was posting about workshops on LinkedIn. And somebody said, do you do these for corporates? And I was like, yes, I do. So, and I wasn't even trying for that. So, yeah,
And it is
absolutely.
actually, it yes, it can be icky in some pockets, but actually, if you follow the right people and curate your feed, it can actually have a real community feel, and you can it can help maintain some of those relationships that, yeah, you might not be catching up with people all the time, but you kind of feel like you are because you're engaging with each other on LinkedIn. So I think that's really important. Early on in our chat, you mentioned the phrase making hay while the sun shines. I think that's something for people who are new to freelancing and gig-based work to think about, because I see a lot of people come in and land their first few gigs, and then things get big, busy, and they have the "I've got to make hay while the sun shines" mindset. And then they lose all the flexibility that was the very reason they started working like this in the first place. So it can be really tempting to be like, oh my gosh, I've just got to say yes to every bit of work coming my way.
Oh, that's me.
I know, right?
Guilty. But
I know. So people be like, yeah, no, this gig-based work, it helps me just, you know, live my best life, and I'm going to exercise and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then they say yes to everything. Actually, I know someone recently who went back in-house because they'd made such a balls up of, yeah, just taking on too much work, losing any balance. And they were like, I'm actually going to go back in-house for a bit. I desperately do want to come back to gig-based work. I'm going to do it completely differently next time. So how can you, you know, I spoke to someone, it was actually a workling last year or the year before, and she's like, oh, Michelle, I did a all-nighter. I was up till 4 a.m., haven't done that for 10 years. And I'm like, she's like, you know, the type of project it was. She's like, it's not even what I enjoy. I'm like, why didn't you, like, reach out to someone else to collaborate on it and actually find someone who does love doing that piece of work?
Yeah.
So there's nothing that independent talent love more than collaborating. Because the one thing they miss when leaving in-house work is being part of a team. And that's a big part of what we're trying to address at Workling. Yes, we help businesses access talent, but we also want this talent to be at their best. So how we know the sense of belonging and inclusion is so important when you're working in-house, but guess what? We're humans. It's also important when you work outside of the work model. So for our community, we have virtual co-working sessions. We have start of the month kickoff sessions. We have.
I never go to any of them because I'm
the worst.
Yeah, I know,
you're terrible.
I'm the worst. I'm the worst.
You're the worst. No. But it's not for everyone. Some people, you know, you've got such an amazing network. Not everyone needs that social and inclusion component of working, which is fine. Some people are there just because they want to be a part of the change appreciate how we're advocating for this work model. Other people are here for the community. But for me, it's really important to provide that space for people who are working independently, because it can be incredibly isolating, particularly maybe when things aren't going so well. One of our worklings said to me recently, I no longer talk to my mates or my family when they ask me how work is going. I'll just give a, no, it's all good, because they don't understand what it's actually like to run your own business.
With my friends and family.
I know. So they were saying, I save that conversation for other worklings and for other people who are doing their own thing, because they get it. It's actually too hard. So I think to have that support network, people to learn off, people to collaborate with. We've had some amazing examples of people teaming up on projects where you start to get exactly what you were talking about with your the proposal you're putting together. You're actually starting to form these bespoke consulting teams.
Mm.
So how can you, you know, tap into whether it's people at different levels of seniority or different skill sets, or just to be able to take on bigger projects? They bloody love collaborating. So I think creating that space, so that's, you know, coming back to what we're actually talking about before I derailed myself, advice I would give people is just have that social network in place. And whether it's through a community, whether it's through just really intentionally organizing some regular catch-ups with people, because it will feel, you know, you're kind of on your own. So it's really important to have that network around you.
Yeah, excellent. And where can people get more, Michelle, more Workling?
Did I see
that you have a session coming up on how to, or the gig economy and all info on that? Or is that past?
No, that is coming up I'm going to say the 20th of Feb. So I don't know what side of this podcast coming out that will be.
Might be out already, but you'll do another one, right?
Well, we will do another one. And you know, we will do another one. And I mean, we've run lots of different workshops and webinars over the last 3 years. This is the biggest response we've ever had. So really, it's just about, I'm like having a chat to people who might be interested in going gig in the future. And that's not for me. I'm not trying to like lure people over to the dark side, over to the gig side, but I just know there's a lot of interest in gig-based work. And often these are leaders who are also, you know, still working in-house.
Mm.
And there's a lot of inherent trust in the model because they also see themselves working in it one day. So we'll just have a pretty informal chat about what it's like and some of the peaks and pits and good bits and bad bits about going gig and the things that you can think about. So yeah, that is coming up. Follow me on LinkedIn for a variety of
Yes.
musings, sometimes work related, sometimes crazy life related. And workling.com is where we are at.
Yeah. So many different ways to get in touch. Well, Michelle, is there anything else you want to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
No, all good. Keep up the great work. Love just the chance to talk through the future of work and with someone who is living this work model
Yeah,
themselves.
yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. For the listeners, once again, if you do listen via Apple Podcasts, get me a 5-star rating and write a
Five
review.
star.
Even like my posts on LinkedIn as well, because
Do
we
not
I just
verbally. Do not. We did have a chat earlier about the joy that is someone verbally telling you that they love your
But
content
they
and
don't
it's like,
engage with your
just press like. So
because we know the algorithm hates
don't go verbally.
help a sister out. So
Help a sister out and don't verbally tell her that you love her podcast.
but I
With
mean I yeah or you can also
the
subscribe so you're not relying on seeing
five
a LinkedIn post being shown to you by the algorithm that hates work and business related
stars.
content. But
Yeah.
in summary, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, Michelle. This has been such a fun way to spend my morning and for all of the amazing insights and advice that you shared.
Thank you.
And for the listeners, I will be back soon with another episode. And don't forget to hit that like button. Bye.